My name is Robin. I'm a grateful believer in Jesus finding victory over the effects of past abuse and codependency. I was born in Omaha, Nebraska in 1979 to a hairdresser and a flyboy. My mom was the oldest girl in a good Catholic family of seven children. At a young age, she learned to put others first, helping her mom raise her siblings when her dad died, after her dad died when she was just 8 years old. My dad was in the Air Force when he met my mom. He had grown up in a proper home where children were more seen, less heard, and cocktail hour was commonplace. At a young age, my family moved to the Portland area. I was a busy child, trying every sport, group, and dance class out there. Swimming was the sport in which I excelled. At age 6, I began competing and smelled like chlorine for the next 10 years. I swam every day after school, sometimes before school as well. Most weekends were booked with swim meets. I excelled, qualifying for state, regionals, zones, and the dream of going to the Olympics. My home life appeared normal to the outsider. We looked like any other family at Catholic Mass. But inside my home, there was a constant undercurrent of uneasiness. Although I don't recall seeing my dad drink openly and constantly, he abused alcohol and suffered from undiagnosed mental health issues. When triggered, he exhibited tremendous mood swings and eruptions of yelling, anger, and violence. As I entered puberty and beyond, I do not recall many conversations with my dad, nor him touching me at all. Therefore, I never felt loved by my father. Some of my best memories were getting hugs from my mom after I raced. It seemed my performing pulled everything together. I sought to excel in everything because I thought I would be loved. But no matter how many ribbons or trophies I won, somehow I never felt like I was enough. My mom was my rock. I relied on her greatly to tell me everything was okay, even when I knew it wasn't. My dad was verbally and emotionally abusive toward my mom, and I remember her crying many times, but pretending like she was fine. I lived to please my mom. My dad's violent behavior progressed as he got older. As we got older, we all did. I recall one instance when my dad went after my brother in a fit of rage after I tattled on him. I remember feeling responsible for my brother's beating and realizing my father was not my protector. Rather, my brother was the one who was going to protect me from my dad. When my dad didn't interact with me, he was very critical. I was never allowed to keep him waiting. I was not to disturb him when he was watching the news. I lived in a continual state of anxiety. I also learned that anything lower than an A on a report card was unacceptable. Although I was taught I could accomplish anything I set my mind to, I was extremely self-critical, and this just further fueled my desire to be perfect. I entered high school and decided not to swim, so pursued other sports and activities. But as much as I tried, I couldn't seem to excel as much as I had with swimming. I transitioned from a private school to a public school and found myself donning a new Eddie Bauer wardrobe just as the grunge era was commencing. It didn't seem to matter. As a new girl, I got plenty of attention from boys. I also had a cool older brother, and soon I was at parties drinking and smoking. I felt like I could let loose because he was looking after me. But when he left for college, my protector was gone. As I started shopping at thrift stores and dating some popular boys, I was overcome by insecurity and wanting to be everything for everyone. I had friends in many circles and didn't trust anyone, so I kept them all at a distance. Internalizing so much for so long led to depression and other ways of coping. I developed bulimia midway through high school, and although short-lived, experienced some relief from my anxiety. My senior year, I was rebelling, trying desperately to get attention, but it felt like I was screaming underwater and no one could hear me. My smoking increased to a daily habit as my bad boy boyfriend was wearing off on me. Yet even with these poor choices, I still participated in athletics, advanced classes, and held a job on the weekends. I was okay on the outside, but inside I remember feeling so low that I contemplated suicide. At the time, it seemed like a legitimate idea. God seemed very disconnected from my life. When it was time to apply for colleges, I chose only out-of-state schools. I wanted to escape. While in school, I struggled to balance partying with studying, so I received my first C my freshman year. Since this was unacceptable, I switched my major to something a little more manageable. Although I was a member of the lacrosse team, I couldn't hide the result of my excessive drinking. Over the course of 4 years in college, I put on nearly 30 pounds. I did manage to quit smoking at age 20 after complaining about my wrinkles to a friend. She said it was because I smoked, so I quit. I was still in control. While home for Thanksgiving my junior year, my parents announced they were getting a divorce. It was a difficult reality to face. Our outwardly perfect family was crumbling, and it shocked many of my friends. I tried to hide from the darkness, but depression crept in, affecting my ability to concentrate. I started seeing a counselor on campus and for the first time shared everything that was going on with me. She put me on an antidepressant, which I took religiously as I continued to party. My drinking led to more poor choices. I started leaving parties with guys in pursuit of feeling loved and accepted. Sometimes I awoke, not completely remembering everything from the previous night. I was not in control. I realized the severity of my choices when my clouded judgment led to the date rape of my friend. For years, I bore the guilt and shame for what that man did to my friend. It would be 15 years before I would also acknowledge that I was also sexually assaulted that night. I developed a pattern of diminishing harm done to myself while putting others' needs first. Many times, taking personal responsibility for others' actions. Somehow in my head, I was to be invincible in order to be loved. My mom began attending a charismatic Christian church. It was a shock to my Catholic upbringing, but I would attend with her when I came home for a visit. The Holy Spirit was beginning to work in my life. I would be in tears most services and not want to go back to school. I didn't like the person I had become. The latter half of my senior year, I partied less and finished strong. I then moved back home to Oregon for a fresh start. I made new friends at church and started learning how to have a social life without alcohol. After going down for several altar calls, I finally accepted Jesus into my heart. My trusted family, or my trusted pastor and mentor, told me it was as if a veil had been lifted and she knew I was changed. But whenever anyone turns to the Lord, the veil is taken away. 2 Corinthians 3:17. I had a new heart. This prompted me to quit drinking and vowed to live solely for the Lord. I started attending counseling and even started swimming again. The Lord was growing me leaps and bounds. But I became keenly aware of all the young couples around me at church. I desired to get married and have a family. At age 27, I was set up on a blind date and fell hard. From the first date, I had an alcoholic drink and started a habitual cycle of drinking in an on-and-off-again relationship that lasted 4 years. With the first drink, I compromised my core values to please him, and that was just the beginning. I desperately wanted to get married, and this blindsided me from seeing the warning signs. I tried to make him into the person I wanted him to be. I had a list of things that would make me happy. No matter how much I tried to control the relationship, it was not picture perfect like I wanted it to be. It was my first love, and the first time I'd ever let anyone in so close. His tendency to avoid me when I was upset regularly triggered my wounds of neglect and past abuse. Many times I would stuff my emotions and then erupt when I couldn't contain it any longer, a learned pattern of fight, flight, and flee. I gave everything I had, but none of it seemed to work, and it was taking a toll on my health. In the fall of 2009, I sat in front of the counselor, my boyfriend, who told me I was depressed and needed to go on medication. At this point, I was drinking every day, while at the same time asking God to help me change. I looked at them both in the horror at the fact that I would have to stop drinking in order to take medication, but I humbly agreed. This period was probably the loneliest of my life. My boyfriend seemed to avoid me, or I pushed him away. It was hard to tell. I spent much of my time alone, completely isolated from my friends. I didn't have any energy for anyone, including myself. When I was at my lowest and fighting suicidal thoughts, I had a very clear understanding that if I stayed in this relationship, I was going to end up in a mental institution. Even with this clarity, I still struggled to break free from this person I loved, even though it was ultimately hurting me. It was a process, but I began making decisions that were best for me rather than the relationship. I began training for my first marathon and raising money for cancer. I had failed at the relationship, but this is something I knew I could succeed at. After getting laid off, I went through almost 3 years of inconsistent employment and more rejection from interview after interview. Many days running was the only thing I had to leave the house for. With my second marathon, I was getting faster and loved the acceptance I felt with my accomplishments and smaller pant size. This brought more attention from men, and I continued to seek the Lord, but it was taking a back seat to my need to feel belonged, like I belonged. In the spring of 2012, after a 10-mile run, I spent the day cleaning my mom's house and taking care of her after surgery. I went home, and my back went out to the point of incapacitation. I lay in my bed, and a boy I'd met online informed me he was seeing someone else. I wanted to erupt in tears, but as soon as I did, my back would seize up. I laid there, unemployed, alone, unable to move, every coping mechanism removed, except the still small voice of the Lord. I said aloud to him, "Okay, you got me." It was then I made the commitment to not drink and began seeking the Lord fiercely. 5 months later, I ran my third marathon and had gotten a full-time job and started attending a new church. Things were looking up, but I still desperately wanted to meet that special person God had for me. In February of 2013, I thought I met him. It was an intense, emotionally driven relationship from the start. I was whisked away quickly with the euphoric highs of falling in love, completely oblivious to the circumstances I was entering into. With a past of neglect, I was flattered that this man wanted to spend every minute with me. He lavished me with gifts, words, promises to marry and take care of me. I thought it was cute when he was jealous of my friends and my dog. Well, at first, I had concerns about our relationship and wanted to talk to my friends. He seemed offended by this and told me, "All we need is God." How high the highs were, the lows were even lower. Soon the criticism I saw him portray to others was directed at me. I became quickly aware that if I behaved outside his expectations, he would retaliate through emotional and verbal abuse, often shaming me in public and withholding affection when he was upset with me. A dynamic that triggered my dysfunctional past, so I would react in much the same fashion. No matter how much I worked on myself, he still managed to find something to criticize. On one occasion, he had gotten me a gift. When he perceived I wasn't grateful enough, he ripped it out of my hands and threw it out the window as we were driving on the freeway. His violence scared me. Although he never hit me, he would throw things, pursue me, and berate me. If he left in a fit of rage, he would frequently continue the attack over text message for hours later. The next morning, he would say he was sorry and that he loved me. I sometimes prayed he would hit me, because then I would know his behavior was wrong. I didn't know that this was all very wrong. One time, I hid behind my bed, laying in the fetal position, praying in the spirit. He found me and looked at me and sarcastically asked, "You call yourself a woman of God?" I felt helpless. The end came when I triggered yet another tirade, and he said it was over. I called my mom. Shocked at hearing his behavior in the background, she asked me why I didn't call the cops. "I couldn't," I told her. Somehow this man, nearly twice my size, convinced me that if I called the cops, I would be in the wrong. I felt like a prisoner in my own home. Looking back on this relationship while in recovery, I could see my part in the dysfunction. In this relationship, I did not set one boundary for myself. I compromised my values to keep the relationship together. I also know now that was not love. That was abuse, and I did not deserve it. I wouldn't have known that if it weren't for Celebrate Recovery. It would take me 2 years before I told anyone the details of this relationship or even come to the realization that it was wrong. This relationship was the epitome of my codependency. I didn't want to repeat the pattern. I needed help. I sought the Lord more fervently and started attending Bible studies and training for another marathon. I was consumed with the goal of qualifying for Boston, but the God had another plan. I got injured while training and wasn't able to run the race. With another failed relationship, I was still seeking to perform in another area, trying to find my identity and self-worth in something other than God. When my friend invited me to celebrate recovery in November of 2014, I said yes without hesitation. I knew I had issues. I just didn't know where I belonged. On my first night at CR, I grabbed several pamphlets, one of which defined codependency. Later at home, I read through the bolded list and melted into a puddle of tears on the kitchen floor. Oh my gosh, I was an issue, I thought. My sense of self was so wrapped up in my defects and hurts that I had no idea who God created me to be. I had so much to work on. I was overwhelmed on where to start, but God led the way. I started attending the codependency group the following week. When the other ladies shared, I felt like they were in my head. Although my situation looked different, I realized I was not alone. I made a commitment to go back to group when I didn't want to and share, especially when I didn't feel like it. For months, every time I walked through the doors of CR, I felt like I wanted to throw up. But I always left feeling a little bit better. During this time, I went through yet another heartbreak and felt rejected. I was ill-equipped to be in a relationship just yet. There were many hurts I finally needed to face and triggers I needed to understand. Psalm 34:18 reads, "The Lord is close to the brokenhearted and those who are crushed in spirit." Opening up to others was new to me, but God blessed me when I did. I found it amazing how he would use others to speak life into me as I poured my heart out. I fought the fear that I would be punished for showing my true self. I fought against my old ways of internalizing and the lie that I had to be perfect in order to be loved. I began developing transparent relationships with these ladies by talking through my challenges within the safety of the group. As iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another. Proverbs 27:17. Through Celebrate Recovery, I have learned to develop healthy boundaries with men and prayerfully seek out friendships first without letting my emotions take the lead. Although I had a childhood of dysfunction and criticism with men in my life, I see God using CR to restore everything the enemy tried to steal from me through encouragement and acceptance of new friends. And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. Romans 8:28. When faced with conflict, I had developed an unhealthy pattern of saying what I thought the other person wanted to hear in the moment, not really knowing how I felt until I left the conversation. This has been a challenge for me as I work through my issue with codependency, but I'm making progress. This past December, I completed my first step study. I found the fourth step especially impactful. It reads, "We made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves." My inventory was 6 pages long. Sharing it with my sponsor allowed me to finally release years of abuse, failures, injustices, hurts, guilt, and feelings of inadequacy. I received validation for what I'd been through and freedom as I learned to forgive and move on. This has brought peace into my life. It was also key for me to learn about different forms of abuse in order to recognize them in my past. I could start to see that it was my own brokenness that caused me to perceive this behavior as love. I can now see how much the Lord has delivered me from and have the capacity to begin believing who he says that I am. I have remained single until now because I know the Lord wanted to break the cycle of codependency and abuse for my future generation. It ends with me. Jeremiah 29:11-13 states, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. Then you will call on me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart." The most dramatic change in my life has beginning to believe that I am enough. I am enough no matter how I feel. I am enough no matter how others treat me. I am enough because God says I'm enough. In the past, I felt like I had attained perfection in order to be loved and accepted. Even as a Christian, this was the lens through which I viewed my relationship with God. This false view of love affected my expectation of those around me and tainted my ability to have healthy relationships. Since being in recovery, I have learned that God loved me while I was still a sinner, and I cannot do anything to earn his love or lose his love. I no longer seek out accomplishments, relationships, meeting a goal weight to be enough in this world. My Christian walk has changed. I have fallen in love with God as my ultimate source, the author of my life, and the protector I was always searching for. This realization has allowed me to let go of the details of my future and focus on who he wants me to be today. I have learned to stop trying to make things happen and have faith that God's timing is always perfect. As I look toward God for direction, I no longer do things just to please others, and I'm free to please an audience of one, the great I am. I've learned that God has my best interest in mind, and I can trust him. He never leaves me nor forsakes me, even when others do. He guides me in my relationships and helps me to lean on others when I need encouragement or prayer. Since being in recovery, I have stayed true to my commitment to not drink alcohol. If this is your first time here, keep coming back. God will use others to speak to you. The pieces will fall into place as you commit to the process and let him into every nook and cranny of your being. This program will provide structure to shed some light on areas that you've had dysfunctional thinking, just like it did for me. God has done an awesome work in me, and I've completed the step study, connected with a sponsor, and served as a greeter. But I understand that it's not all about me. I have just completed the leadership training and am letting the Lord guide me in next steps. It's a process. I've had some victory, but I also recognize other areas where the Lord wants me to dig deeper. But wait, there's more, I like to say. I'd like to close with a verse in Philippians that I've clung to during many sleepless nights when fear crippled my judgment and stifled my ability to think clearly. Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Thank you.